Into the Fold is a podcast on mental health issues, produced by the Haug Foundation for Mental Health. The Haug Foundation is a strategic grant maker based at the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. Hi, welcome to Into the Fold, a podcast on mental health issues. I'm your host, Ike Evans.
So I encourage families to try and keep each other safe, to keep the lines of communication open, and to instill hope in their kids. But most of all, I try to encourage, humbly encourage, because I find that it's difficult to do this myself sometimes, is self-care, so that we can be emotionally available to our families.
The voice that you just heard belongs to one of our guests for this episode. May is Children's Mental Health Month, and today we are talking about COVID-19 and its effect on children, youth, and families. In the state of Texas, schools have been shut down since mid-March. As the pandemic drags on into its third month, it is still anyone's guess when schools will reopen and what conditions they will be subject to once they do. Meanwhile, millions of children and adolescents have been sheltering at home. Their options for physical movement, socialization, and play, all severely curtailed by the pandemic and the lockdown measures put in place to try to curb its spread. Just as much as kids have never needed more attention, parents have never needed more of a break. And on top of that, we have good reason to believe that home is not necessarily the safest place for all kids. For most of our listeners, these are unprecedented circumstances. To help us make sense of it all, we're joined by a pair of experts who come at this from the perspectives of both healthcare professionals and parents. Allison Hall is a pediatric physical therapist and the CEO founder of My Kid Blooms, a digital resource for parents to find pediatric and OBGYN health-related information and professionals that match the needs of their families. She's joined by Dr. Nakia Scott, a child and adolescent psychiatrist and owner of Holistic Mental Health. Both of our guests are based in Austin, Texas. Allison and Nakia, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
Okay, so this question is for both of you. So you are both parents. Do you have an image of what successful weathering looks like for families right now? And even some wisdom that you can share with parents of younger children as they go through this?
You know, some days for me, I just think of success as getting through the day and everybody gets in bed and everybody wakes up in the morning. And if that happens, then woohoo, I did it. And so kind of going along with that is, I think that I have really transitioned into living in day tight compartments or hour tight compartments, kind of really only worrying about the things that I can deal with right then and there and kind of prioritizing. And it's been kind of fun like that. Usually I'm running around a million different places and, you know, my family's also kind of made a lot of effort to celebrate our victories and, you know, things that celebrate things that we've adapted to that we maybe didn't choose, but we've learn to adapt to it. And, you know, really sitting around the dinner table and talking about those things and praising each other for things that we usually wouldn't praise each other for. My youngest child is 8. And so can really feel for parents with younger children who, you know, you're trying to multitask, they're used to giving, you know, sharing the load of childcare with maybe preschools or nannies or whatever it is. And, you know, my humble advice to them was, you know, would be just, you're going to get onto the other side of this and, you know, give yourself grace, knock it down to only what you can manage and, you know, look back and be proud of every little accomplishment you do. So.
Okay. Nakia, how about your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I really agree with Allison. I really can appreciate what she said. I think this question reminds me of one of my favorite quotes by Mary Ann Rockmucker. And she says, courage doesn't always roar. Sometimes courage is that little voice at the end of the day that says, I'll try again tomorrow. And this is a challenging and very frustrating time for all of us. And so, like many parents, I try to be as patient and as loving, you know, as possible with my son. I try to use my imagination and think about what life must be like for him and for other kids. You know, many kids, including my son, they really miss their grandparents. My son hasn't seen, you know, his grandparents in 2 months. And he asks about them, and we try to have Zoom calls with them, but it's not the same as getting a big hug, you know, from them. Kids miss their teachers and their friends and, you know, being on sports teams. And then there's some families who are traveling to food banks, you know, for the first time. And they're trying to reassure their kids that they have everything under control while wondering how they're going to make it to the next month without a job. So I encourage families to try and keep each other safe, to keep the lines of communication open, and to instill hope in their kids. And I try to talk with them about reminding them of the things that may be going well, even if it doesn't seem like a whole lot. But most of all, I try to encourage, humbly encourage, because I find that it's difficult to do this myself sometimes, is self-care, so that we can be emotionally available to our families. Because I find that if we're calm with ourselves and we're treating each ourselves with grace and with respect, we're more likely to extend that to our children. And then at the end of the day, we try again tomorrow.
Okay. So, Nakia, this question is just for you. We have heard that children, so far as we know, are the least at risk from the virus itself, so far as we know. But what do we know about, you know, their mental health risks right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. There's some interesting research that's come out of China. There was a recent study. Transitions are difficult, you know, for everyone. And many children may not have reached the stage in their development when they have adequate coping skills to be able to negotiate numerous different transitions at one time. And we know that when children are out of school, they may be less physically active. They may be having longer periods of screen time, more irregular sleep patterns. You know, their nutritional needs may not be being met, although I have to say a lot of the school districts in this area, I think, have really tried to do a good job with making sure that kids are getting meals. And they may also have some significant psychosocial stressors, like the fear of getting infected. You know, kids may be worried, am I going to get it? And what's going to happen to me? Or what's going to happen to, you know, my parents? And then, of course, the sadness from not being around friends, teachers, boredom. And unfortunately, there's a higher risk of domestic violence and child abuse, you know, as parents experience job loss and financial stress. And that often leads to feelings of demoralization, feelings of hopelessness, feelings of helplessness. And that's why organizations like Safe Place and Austin are so important. And like the Austin Child Guidance Center, whose therapists do a lot of work with trauma. And the other thing that is a real concern, especially for me as a child psychiatrist, is that as children are at home longer hours and there's a greater risk of boredom, then they often explore areas in the home which parents may try to keep kind of off limits. But kids are crafty and they find ways to get into things. And so it's really so, so very important that parents carefully consider children's safety if there are firearms in the home. So I think creating safe spaces for kids to air their worries, to be protected. And again, that's why I go back to why parents practicing self-care is so important.
I can personally attest to kids finding ways into things, you know, from my own childhood and just at times making me sort of want to ask, like, what evil trail of breadcrumbs even led me here, you know? Yeah. So thank you for that. Allison, you first showed up on my radar because of a blog post that you wrote for the Austin Moms website that was titled, "Sometimes Being Told to Stay at Home Puts Families in Danger at Home." What were you trying to get at with this piece?
Sure. You know, I mean, what I was going to get at is a little different than something that Dr. Scott just brought up about the whole firearms and the mischievous nature of children. That is also another thing that's interesting for me to think about. So I've been, you know, thinking about safety as well. And I mean, I remember really vividly the day that kind of the idea for that post came about. I had just tucked my kids in bed and we'd had a nice evening and we played outside and tucked everybody in bed. I was about to get in bed and I thought, wow, what if I didn't like my kids being around so much? Or what if my husband and I weren't getting along? Or, you know, what if I wasn't in a safe, stable relationship right now? This would be really hard knowing that I had to do this every single day. And I thought, you know what, man, I'm sure there's a lot of families out there that are like that. And I was having a conversation with one of my friends who works in a children's hospital in Dallas. And I said, you know, I'm concerned about, you know, families and being stuck in situations and trauma coming up and lack of coping methods and things like that. And she said, we have had a major uptick in abuse cases coming into the hospital. And I was just like, oh, geez, that's really sad. And what can I do to help this? What can I use as my voice? So I thought, I'm a contributor to Austin Moms. And I asked Allison Mack, I said, hey, Allison, do you think I can write something about this? And do you have any resources of people that I can contact to get an expert knowledge about what parents can do? And she said, yes, please do. And she connected me to SAFE, which is what Dr. Scott referred to earlier about, which is stands for SAFE, Stop Abuse for Everyone. And that's an alliance here in Austin. And the lovely people that work there were just so helpful and supportive. And then Liz Cruz-Garbutt, she's the senior director of family support and advocacy at SAFE. I sent her some questions and I said, can you please help us? Cause we want to help all the audience of, you know, who we reach with the blog. And she answered some fantastic questions about, you know, what parents can do when they're at their breaking point, what were signs of abuse, whether it's physical abuse, emotional abuse, or, you know, neglect. And if for both a person, an adult, and I should not say person, an adult versus a child, and then what they should also do if they weren't in a safe situation. And, you know, they could use SAFE, they could use hotlines, and she gave all these wonderful resources that are out there in that post. And then also she gave some really good advice about what to do if they know someone who is being abused. And there were some really gems of wisdom that Liz shared. And I bet, you know, Dr. Scott could probably speak to as well. And my whole aim for that was just to bring awareness to the situation that, you know, if you see people out and about and not say, you know, practicing social distancing and everything, maybe they're trying to escape their home for a reason other, and they don't need our judgment because they're really not, they're doing it for self-preservation. And I was, you know, it was interesting. The post was shared quite a bit and I thought, wow, this really is hitting home to a lot of people. And so all I wanted people to know is that, you know, you're not alone. There's resources out there and please find them. And, you know, I know Dr. Scott can speak to this cause I know she supports SAFE and has donated to them before.
Nikia, if there's anything you'd like to add about SAFE and the work that they do, feel free.
No, I mean, I agree with Allison. I think they provide a very necessary resource for our community. And I just really appreciate that they exist. And so, yeah, one of the organizations that I'm in, it's a community service organization, donated to Safe Place during this time. Because, you know, we all felt that they really do a lot of good work with children and with women, and, you know, really helping people to remain safe during this period of time.
And as an aside, so the reason why I bring up the blog post is because, you know, I have noticed myself that a lot of the advice that's being proffered these days does seem to imply a very ideal middle class sort of family situation. And I think that there is most definitely a need, you know, for some counterbalancing in this whole conversation about what families and children need. So I'm glad that you could add that for us, Allison.
Thank you. No, I appreciate that. I mean, it's just such a tricky time, and, you know, we don't know what to do, and it's very polarizing. Feelings about you should, you shouldn't, and everybody's making these decisions day to day based on what they see on the news or they read. And I just hope people can see both sides of it. So yeah, thank you for bringing that up.
Okay, Allison, your background is as a pediatric physical therapist. And right now, your work consists of helping families and providers make the transition to telehealth. What do you think is important for parents to know about receiving telehealth?
Thank you. Yes, I have been a pediatric physical therapist for 19 years, and I recently shifted away to being a full-time founder. And that was, it was a hard decision in a way, because I absolutely love treating, but I really felt a call to do this. And I have created a digital platform that connects parents with pediatric and OBGYN healthcare providers who create digital content in telehealth as part of their continuum of care. So in the process of making this, I had to learn a lot about telehealth. And it's been a really interesting learning curve. And it's also been interesting watching people's perceptions of it. 18 months ago, when I started doing research with, I had some UT MBA students working with me and kind of researching which parents' perceptions were then, to now. And you know, there, it was definitely at that point, 68% of parents wanted their providers to offer it. I mean, I can only imagine what that number is now. So there was definitely a movement towards it, but now it's just been this rapid adoption, and it's really interesting. I think that it's another time for grace. You know, there were already these early adopters of healthcare providers who were kind of getting into it, getting their feet wet, trying to do this, trying to offer it, trying to get their head around it. And then there was a lot of healthcare providers that were not there yet. And now they've been pushed into it. Same thing for parents. There were, you know, this trickling of parents that were interested in the offering and they were seeing value in it. And then once again, now they've just kind of like, you've using it out of necessity. And so it's been interesting, you know, kind of, I read a lot about what people's perceptions are. And, you know, there's parents who say, well, it's easier for me to book an oil change than it is to get a telehealth visit with my doctor. And I kind of want parents to understand that that's because of HIPAA. You know, we still have to maintain our HIPAA compliance with, to protect their private information and to make sure, you know, all the exchanges are secure. And, you know, I also want them to know that it is still there. Healthcare providers are keeping their doors open as best they can, and they are trying to make this work. So if it's working, tell them it's working, because I promise you they're really working hard to make it work for the families. And if it's not working, then kind of explain to them what they could do to make it better, if anything. I think that also the other part of that too is that it's not an end all be all. I think that, you know, there are times when there are parents should kind of look and have these conversations with the provider and say, actually, I should probably still come in, and it's still okay for me to do the well visits. And I had a conversation with a pediatrician today, and he brought up a good point that, you know, doctor's offices and everything are getting cleaned, you know, every few minutes really, you know, to in always in between clients, versus a grocery store is not that way. And so, you know, it's just weighing risks and just making sure that everybody still is getting the healthcare they need, whether it's well visits and, or whether it is, mental health support. There's still ways that people can do this and, you know, talk to their providers about ways that they can do that.
Okay. Nakia, so you're kind of a telehealth vet yourself. But in addition to the telehealth, I'm just curious if there are any other ways that your own practice as a mental health professional has been impacted by this crisis. Are there certain things that you find yourself doing more or less frequently as a result?
Yeah, I've been actually really impressed with how the mental health community in Austin and surrounding areas really implemented telehealth. And pretty much all of the psychiatrists that I know, my friends, the therapists that I know are doing that. I started actually doing telehealth about 6 years ago when I worked for the East Texas Behavioral Health Network, and it was a wonderful way to provide access to services to areas of our state that were really indigent. And then in my private practice, I've been doing this for the past 3 years, but now I've switched to entirely telemedicine services. I find that, so in psychiatry, you know, carefully assessing body language, microfacial expressions, you know, just environment, it's very important, right? And it's part of our, something called our mental status exam, which is kind of like our exam. And, you know, I find that I have to be even more careful with that now, which is the reason why I'm still doing telemedicine instead of back in my office where I would have to wear a mask and my patient would have to wear a mask, because it's difficult to really get a good appreciation of facial expressions with that. And so my patients are actually very, they seem to be, you know, happy with the arrangement that we have. And Allison's absolutely right. We do have to be very careful about HIPAA, and confidentiality is very important. So, you know, I know that I am and my colleagues are using HIPAA compliant platforms to try and ensure patient safety. But other things that I'm doing just now, as opposed to prior to COVID-19, is just really trying to make sure that I assess for safety. And I find myself really repeatedly encouraging families to treat themselves with grace. Saying that it's okay. You know, as an example, I'll call him Johnny. That's not his real name. But, you know, I ideally wouldn't advise a kid to be playing hours and hours and hours of video games, right? But if screen time is a part of their curriculum and they're having to use screen time and parents need to get done things that they need to do, then if it's okay, he plays an extra hour of Animal Crossing, I think that's actually okay, you know, because this is not an ideal situation that we're in right now. And in that situation, what I'm more concerned about is who is Johnny playing with, right? It's not necessarily the number of hours of Animal Crossing that he's playing, but, you know, is he playing with his friends or is he playing virtually with some person that's in his 50s that, you know, says that, you know, she's 5 or something or 6. And then content is important too. Is he actually playing Animal Crossing or is he playing Grand Theft Auto? So, you know, cybersecurity and these issues I think are important as more kids are online and using screen time. I find myself going back to the basics too with families, you know, talking with them about nutrition and the importance of exercise and self-love and sleep. We talk about gratitude journaling. You know, I find a lot of the families in my practice are spending time outside while maintaining, you know, proper social distancing, which I highly encourage them to do. And I have a really diverse practice, which I appreciate, a diverse group of families in my practice. And I've really been inspired overall by how parents and their children have really been able to create opportunities to find joy, even during this challenging time. So I learn a lot from them. Not everyone in my practice is struggling. I have some kids in my practice with pretty significant social anxiety disorder, and they're not having to negotiate the busy hallways day after day. So they're actually doing okay. Others describe just this magnification of what are already very difficult family dynamic stressors. And so we're dealing with that. There have definitely been some changes.
Okay. So Nakia, you mentioned diversity. I hope you're okay with me calling out the fact that you are a woman of color therapist. So as much as we use families and children as a generic, is there anything that we should be looking at as a society or just a community that is of particular relevance to, you know, to families and children of color as we move through this?
Well, I mean, there was the report, the recent CDC report, that showed that it was like 33% of hospitalized patients with COVID-19 are Black compared to 18% in the community, and the death rates among Blacks and Hispanics are substantially higher. And there are a number of reasons why that may be the case, you know, including massive disparities in healthcare, systemic inequalities, stigma, you know. But I think it's also important to point out that families of color aren't all exposed to the same exact circumstances. And some of the most common denominators regarding access to wellness, regardless of ethnicity, are household stability and financial security. For example, people who live in neighborhoods that are far from medical facilities and grocery stores may find it more difficult to adopt prevention strategies that are more conducive to general health wellness. There's an overrepresentation of Blacks and Hispanics in jails and in prisons, and that present their own risk in terms of health. So, you know, I'm saying all of that to make the point that children of color may very understandably feel hopeless and angry and anxious, among a lot of other big emotions, when they see and hear about these disparities. They're, you know, in the news and they're being talked about on social media. And I think it's really important for parents to be available when our children have questions about these disparities, and to be as honest as we can in a developmentally appropriate way. But I think it's also equally as important to provide them with hope. There are very many talented and caring people from multiple disciplines, including those at the Hawk Foundation, and who are tirelessly working on helping to close this gap in the healthcare disparity. And I think it's also important to try to empower our children so we can educate our kids on ways to help them stay healthy and stay mentally well. And so it's important that while we answer their questions about why these disparities exist, we also help them problem solve about what things we can do as individuals, what can we do as families, as a community, to help ourselves. So practically, just in my practice, right, I encourage my families to take walks together and to eat meals together. I was just thinking, I attended the Urban Health Expo in Austin this year, and it was a beautiful sight. There were so many families exercising together and attending cooking demonstrations and yoga workshops and breakout groups about stress management. And so I think it's important to remind our kids that we are doing many things to try and help our community.
And another thing that I just thought of is the very disruptive effect, that this is having on kinship relationships. for everyone in general, but you know, maybe this is particularly acutely felt for African Americans. There is in town a certain cashier who I have seen more times than my own parents, just over the past few weeks. And I think under normal circumstances, that would be utterly bewildering to a lot of people. And that's to say nothing for the effect of that on kids too, you know, who might be used to seeing, you know, grandma and grandpa, So that's something that I think of quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, community is so important. You know, and I think about our spiritual community as well. You know, it's been difficult for people not being able to, you know, actually physically go to their places of worship. But I've been so impressed with how they've been able to create virtual church, you know, and virtual youth ministry, you know, groups and ways to engage with each other, you know, despite not being able to do it physically. So I guess in thinking about your question, I really want to emphasize how important it is for our kids to feel like they are empowered and they have hope. And you know, I'd like to think that as a result of this pandemic, there are many kids from all walks of life throughout the world who'll be inspired, you know, to dream big and learn as much as they can in school and, you know, work towards solving some of these problems that we have.
Okay, so this has been a terrific conversation. Is there anything else that either of you care to add?
I think that same thing that we've both been saying this time, I would just say, you know, giving grace, trying to not judge myself or others has been a real goal now more than ever. And just, I try really hard to understand that everybody's coming at these challenging times from a different place. You know, maybe there's past trauma, or maybe there's, you know, previous dependencies, and everybody has their default. And so I try really hard to just be really open-minded and lean into that, and also look into myself and say, what's making me make these decisions, and how's that affecting my family? And am I making decisions, you know, that are in the best interest of my family? And so it's an interesting time. I'm trying to journal about it and stuff like that, just because I know that hopefully there's not another time like this. But I'm also grateful for, you know, you're just saying about how everybody's adapted to it and church and everything like that. I just think, had this happened 20 years ago, wow, you know, life would have stopped. You know, I don't know without telecommunications how it would have been an interesting time.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I can identify with what you're saying, Allison. And, you know, I think for me, when I think about just, again, this, how important just this self-care, self-love is. And as parents, I think it's so normal for us to feel a lot of very big emotions, you know, during this time. And I think we need to just remember to treat ourselves and our children with love and respect. And one of the things my mom would tell me, it makes me think about it during this time. You know, she would say that, you know, dark clouds and thunder and lightning, they occur, but you always know the sun will come back at some point, right? And so with the kids in my practice, I try to help them understand, especially the young kids, that, you know, these dark clouds of COVID-19 will pass at some point. And then hopefully it won't be too long before we're able to see the sun and go out and do all of the fun things that we were doing before again.
Okay, so Allison Hall, Dr. Nakia Scott, just from the things that you have said, I can only imagine the juggling acts that you have both had to do over these past couple of months. So I really do appreciate that you were able to find the time to share with us your insights on what it is that, you know, that families and kids are needing right now. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
And that's a wrap for this episode. I've included a list of links to various resources that help to further explain the pressures on families during this time, as well as possible solutions. Once again, this list is not to be hoarded. Please share it with everyone you can think of, just as taking care of ourselves enhances our ability to help others. So it is as well that by helping others, we enhance our own resilience. Please leave us a review and subscribe to us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or TuneIn. Thank you very much.